I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Lara Kaszelska. Lara founded Optimum Design and Consulting, a Manhattan-based graphic design firm, in 1992 after completing a BS in Graphic Communications Management and Technology at New York University. She also founded XN McMahon, a bicoastal marketing firm for high tech, in 2005, and is a co-founder of Sila Roca Partners, her latest venture, which helps European businesses go to market in the U.S. and vice versa. Lara has been an active member of both the New York chapter of the National Association of Women Business Owners and the Graphic Artists Guild since 1992. She currently sits on the NABO NYC board as a non-voting advisor and is national president of the Graphic Artists Guild. Lara, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, David.
Lara, we've known each other for a while, and I've always been impressed with how you've created success for yourself and your multiple businesses, even during challenging times. I know you and I have talked a lot about this. And I wondered if you could tell me about a time you were stuck and what you did to move forward and grow during that time.
It's just so happened that I've been stuck quite a number of times. We were pretty seriously affected by 9/11, and that was probably the biggest time that I was stuck. But it did take a long time to figure out how to move forward there. But something that I'd rather share, because it was a more concrete learning experience, was when the economy dipped again in 2008-9. It was a really tough time, and we had no resources because we were still struggling to get out of our 9/11 hole several years later. So I realized that we didn't have marketing budget, we needed to put more into the pipeline, and that really one of the only tools left for me was going to be networking. And I had been networking. I had always been networking. But I thought to myself, you know, I've got to figure this out. I've got to be more efficient about it. I've got to be more effective with it. Has to work better than this. And I spent about a year and a half really trying to study the art of networking and how to do it with better results. And I went to a lot of different groups. I watched a lot of different people. And in the end, I got to a point where it was a formula that if I continued to do the same things, the pipeline was always full. And that lasted years and years and years. And it just required the same things. And I've sort of boiled it down to five things, because I love sharing with other people the mistakes I've made and the things I've learned so that they can hopefully avoid the same mistakes and learn something from my experiences. And so I realized that it comes down to five different things that I did over that year and a half in 2008-9, which really turned things around for me. One was changing my elevator pitch. I have a graphic design firm, and we do logos and websites and marketing materials. We don't write the content for it. We work with a copywriter, and we don't do the strategy behind it, like helping people, you know, figure out who their target market is, or, you know, what is different about them than their competitors. But I realized as I was doing that 30-second elevator pitch that you always do in networking meetings, that when people heard we do logos and websites, it was very concrete and easy to understand. And so people got it, but it didn't speak to people as much as when I shifted the pitch to include the thing that we don't do, but that our sort of partner companies do. Because we've always partnered with marketing firms and copywriters. Marketing firms are great partners because we don't do the strategy. So, and generally they don't do the execution. So, you know, if somebody comes to me and they want a website and they can't tell me, you know, what should be on it or who their target market is, I generally send them to a marketing consultant and they come back afterwards and it's a much stronger site because the marketing consultant has helped them figure that out. And I'll outsource to a partner with copywriters. But I decided to include all of that in my pitch. So now I say something more along the lines of how we can help you figure out what differentiates you from your competitor and position you in a way that is targeted towards the type of client you're looking to reach and what they're looking to hear. And then we create beautiful, engaging marketing materials around that positioning. Of course, your website, but also a whole set of collateral from the business card, which is the first thing someone sees, to a brochure or leave behind, to your email newsletter template. so that everything has the same consistently branded look and feel. And we help our clients keep their make their mark with distinction and keep their name in front of their customers. And somehow broadening it to include the ancillary components that we don't actually do, but which really are part of a website when you're doing it in a best practices way, just really grabbed people more. So changing the elevator pitch was one of the five things.
Yeah, that certainly, the way you shifted it certainly adds a lot of clarity and depth.
Yeah, I think it speaks to people more. That idea of like, ooh, how can I be different from my competitors? And even though the website does do that from a visual perspective, I mean, we always look at our client's competitor website and say, okay, we want to do something different here. But really, it starts with the message they're saying, which is not technically what my firm does, but we bring that to life in a creative way once a copywriter or a marketer does a positioning statement around them. So the second thing was choosing the right networking groups. There's so many. Anyone who lives in New York City knows that, I mean, there's just, I'm going to guess there are probably somewhere like 50 different types of groups. Some of them are ones everyone's heard of, groups that form under an umbrella like BNI or Network, where you pay a substantial fee and there's a group leader who makes their living running the group. And it's a, you know, there are different kinds of groups or different kinds of chapters under the heading of BNI or Network. There are also many, many groups that are just single individual groups run by one or a few people who organically grew a group around their own base contacts. And then there are a few in between. Clients for Life comes to mind, where there's maybe, you know, three or four groups, not as many as BNI, which is a global franchise, but more than just one individual group. So I guessed it a lot. I went to a lot of them to try to find out what I thought was the most effective for me, because everybody is going to have a different answer to that. There's no one answer to what is the best networking group. It has to do with what your profession is, how you interact with people, how much you like or dislike structure. Some of them have a lot of rules to follow. Others are more loose. It depends on the type of people in the group. You could have two very, very different network groups based on the types of people involved. You can have two very, very different BNI groups just based on the leadership. So for me, it was evaluating the groups, not just based on the comfort level, like what was the frequency of group that I was most comfortable with, which turned out to be every other week. I feel like once a month is not quite enough, because if you skip one month and then somebody else skips another month, you haven't seen that person in 3 months, and that's hardly keeping you top of mind. Once a week was too much for me, just personally, but I feel like every other week was the right frequency. So I realized that was a good component. And then I had to find a group where the people in the group got networking, that it wasn't selling, that it wasn't like, here, buy my services, here's my business card, but it was, let me listen to what you're looking for and see if I can connect you with somebody who can help you. Because by and large, the people in that room aren't necessarily going to be the leads that you get for networking. They could be. And in my case, they often are, because website is something that everybody needs. But for many people, they're not really looking at the people in that room as their target client as much as their, let's say, outsourced sales force. If you can explain to the people in that room how to sell what you do, and they can keep their ears open and mention you accordingly in a proactive way, not just wait till somebody says, hey, do you know a website designer? But when they find a friend or colleague who's launching a new business, they say, hey, I bet you need a new website. You should talk to Lara. So that kind of person, the person who's aware enough to do that, the person who's expecting to be able to do that for the other people in the group, is the kind of level of networking quality that you're looking for in that group. So it's the type of people in the group, the sort of general, I would say, culture of the group, the vibe, the rules, and also the types of professions. You know, you want a place where you're going to have people in your circle. In my circle, I like having a printer, a marketing person, a copywriter, SEO, sometimes like digital marketing. So anyone who is in related industries is more likely to find leads for me, and vice versa. So finding the right networking group instead of just going to the one you've always gone to for 8 years, or going to the one your friend is in, or going to the one that's got the most convenient schedule for you, was another component.
Okay.
The third was committing to going the extra mile within those groups. So it wasn't just about showing up. It was about really making sure my attendance was as perfect as it could be. And in some cases, you are asked to have an alternate if you can't attend. And so making sure that that alternate is also trying to form bonds. And in my case, it was my design director, and helping her form bonds with some of those people as well, so that when she went, it wasn't as if I was missing. There was still representation from our firm. I have this like personal rule that's not really, you know, a rule that all groups encourage you to get together one-on-one with people in the groups. But for me, it was a personal rule that I made for myself that said, all right, in between each meeting of this networking group, I am going to have a one-on-one with one person. And generally it was the newest person. But then from there, I just sort of cycled around and I went through everybody in the group. And when I was done, I did it again. And you might think, well, I've already sat down with that person. But it wasn't really as much about, you know, learning about them for the first time. After a while, it became deepening the relationship, getting to know them better, opening up, sharing about something a little bit more personal, making yourself a little bit more vulnerable, because in exchange, you're going to then learn more about them. And that's where you can really find how to help each other in a way that creates that true relationship that's more than just the surface relationship of, oh, yeah, we're in the same networking group. But it's, wow, I really get this person. I really understand their challenge. They understand mine. We have each other's backs to an extent. It takes a lot of time. If I'm in a group that meets every other week, then on the alternate weeks, I'm having a one-on-one with somebody. So that's, you know, four meetings a week, two with the whole group and two with an individual. I'm sorry, four meetings a month. It also, for me, meant inviting guests to the group. So as many people as I can invite, I try to invite a guest to almost every group. And I'm in multiple groups. My peak, I was in four, and right now I'm in three. But I would try to invite guests to every group. And sometimes it was inviting people from one group to another group. But when you're inviting guests, you're seen as somebody who knows a lot of people and somebody who's well-connected, and that raises your profile within the group. Likewise, if there are opportunities to volunteer or play a sort of leadership role within the group, then step up and do that, because that gives you more visibility. In one group, I volunteered our firm to keep a membership brochure, to design a membership brochure and keep it up to date. In another group, I run a website that we've designed for the group. In a third group, I have a lot of input into guest speakers. I'm always suggesting guest speakers, and when they choose mine, I'm arranging for that person to come in. So keeping a high profile in the group is a great way to get more attention on you and maximize your visibility within that group. The fourth is, every time I have a one-on-one meeting, I always make sure to leave with an action item for somebody. I ask them for their business card at the beginning of the meeting, and I take notes on it. And I always write down at least one thing I'm going to do. I mean, hopefully in an ideal world, it's, oh my gosh, I know someone who needs your services, but that doesn't usually happen. But sometimes it's, okay, tell me about the kinds of people that I could introduce you to that would be well positioned to give you a lead. So, you know, who are the people you network with most often? Who are the people who are feeding you business? And then I try to introduce those types of people to the person I'm talking to. Sometimes that's just not going to work either, because their profession is so unusual, just don't. So sometimes I offer them, you know, well, I ask people, you know, what do you do to network and how do you get your business? And if they like going to networking groups, I'll invite them to one of mine. Or there's a wonderful woman named Cynthia Greenewalt who does this sort of masterclass on networking. And I keep a list on my computer called Cynthia's List. And when people express interest in attending her free introductory workshop, which I think is fabulous and amazing and very interesting because it's based on quantum mechanics, I say, hey, I'll invite you the next time. And then the next time she sends an invite out, I forward it. So I always put something down and then I make sure I do it, because a coffee meeting, you leave it and you feel like, wow, that was really great. I really bonded with that person. But you've got to have some sort of follow-up and keep yourself in their inbox. And most importantly, to do what you say you're going to do, because so many people don't. And that is, I realize that that's a pretty easy way to distinguish myself, is to actually, when I say, hey, I'm going to send you this, to send it. And that's fortunately unusual today.
It certainly is.
Yeah. You know, you think so. But I realized that early on that a lot of, and it's not always because people are, I think people often have the best of intentions, but everybody gets busy. So the trick is, when you're done with that coffee meeting, to get your follow-up in within 24 hours, because otherwise it sits there on the list of things you need to do and don't do. So the last one is to make meaningful introductions. You get these intros sometimes where it's like, Tom, meet Nancy, Nancy, meet Tom. And that's just not very inspiring. You don't really know why you're supposed to meet Tom or what that, how that could help or benefit you. And you're busy, so you don't tend to respond to those as much, or you wait to see if Nancy will respond first, because if she doesn't respond, why do you need to know her? So it's time consuming, but the way I make the intro is to say, hey, Tom, I know you've been looking for such and such. Nancy offers this and that, and this is why I thought she would be somebody you'd like to know. And hey, Nancy, I know Tom through this venue, and this is a part about Tom that would be interesting to you. You guys should connect. And it takes a while to formulate that. And sometimes I even have to go back to Nancy or Tom and ask them if I'm saying something the right way, because it's a little bit of a leap to try to use somebody else's lingo, especially when the person you're sending it to would be understanding it and you don't quite understand it yourself. So sometimes I go, all right, Nancy, can you read this? Is this accurate? Is this the way I should be positioning you to Tom? And sometimes when I know I'm going to have trouble with that, at the coffee meeting, I ask, okay, when I'm going to introduce you to the accountants I know, what can I say about you that will make them want to know you? Like, they probably have lots of people in your profession trying to meet them because they feed business to you. So why would they be more interested to meet you than anyone else? And I make them tell me, and I write that down on the business card. Fortunately, I have very small handwriting. So I, yeah, sometimes people look at me and they're like, do you want a piece of paper? And I'm like, No, I got this. And I just write it all on the card. That's my own personal system, because I keep all those cards. And then when I want to find all those notes, they're right there. But I find when I'm making meaningful introductions, they're more likely to actually happen. And in that way, there's more benefit to me, because at the end, people are grateful to me. And it's that whole thing of like the law of reciprocity. You do wonderful good things for people, and they are more likely to do wonderful good things back. So I found over time that my pipeline was always full. It was always absolutely filled to the brim. And I realized that it was a combination of doing these five things regularly that kept it there. And it really, all of them speak to being more noticeable and top of mind and more helpful to other people. And I think that that's really the key to networking, is how helpful you can be to other people.
Right. And, you know, this strikes me as something broader as well, Laura, which is the importance of systems in business and in marketing, and finding a system that works for your kind of business and that meets your budget.
Absolutely. And I find that if I don't have a system, it's very hard to get things done. So, I mean, everybody's got their own. Mine involve, you know, a daily post-it note and a weekly post-it note. I like to write things down, if you haven't picked up. Even though I, you know, operate in a digital world, I just somehow I like my lists in handwriting. And I, you know, I have different systems for organizing my inbox. I have systems for organizing my business cards. But I, you're right, if it doesn't have a system, it's hard to do it on a consistent
basis. Right. And entrepreneurs are by nature resistant to structure and systems, yet it's structure and systems that really help generate success and help you scale.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm lucky because I'm an overtent. So I have this thing about, you know, everything has to be done the same way over and over and over. That's like a little bit of OCD that I have. And I think it serves me well in this. If you know, there's some quirky aspects to it too. If you look at my calendar, which I keep in paper, and I will tell you without fail, I can always look and then schedule an appointment with my paper calendar faster than anyone can on their iPhone or BlackBerry. But anyway, look at that calendar. Everything is written in the exact same pen. You know, I have, like, I'm just super, I don't know, it helps me feel like some sense of control, I think, that I keep everything organized and systematized and done the same way over. There's so much chaos in being an entrepreneur and, you know, running a business. You get curveballs all the time, that the little things that you can feel like you're in control of and that can be, you know, that you can rely on and are always consistent. I think that helps you alleviate the stress that comes down the curveballs.
Absolutely. So, Laura, I know relationships have been a big part of your success. How have they helped you smash plateaus?
Well, in a lot of different ways. And certainly by leading to business, as described through the networking conversation we just had, but also in terms of support. I've been very heavily involved with both the Graphic Artists Guild and National Association of Women Business Owners, and served on committees and been on boards. And when you're serving that way with someone else, it's a bit of a unique opportunity, because it gives them an opportunity to see what it's like to do business with you. You've got a common goal, you're working with with other people to get there. And they get a sense of, you know, how responsive are you? How responsible are you? Are you doing that thing we talked about before, that doing what you said you're going to do thing? Can they count on you? What is the quality of your work like? What is your quality of your communication like? And when you can star in that, when you have, you know, when people are impressed and say, oh, I love working with her, not only do they think of you as someone they might want to work with for your, you know, their own selves, but they are more likely to refer other people. Someone says, hey, I need a logo. Oh my God, you've got to talk to Lara. I worked with her to design a logo for this event and it, on this committee we both serve on, and she was just fantastic. So if you have the opportunity, you know, that saying everybody knows, you know, as you do one thing, you do everything. And so if you have the opportunity to show off a little bit of what it's like to work with you, people will assume that it's a great experience for them or for others. So that's another aspect of getting business, which certainly helps you smash plateaus because it's helping you grow. But even more so than that, it's the support you can get from the people that you get to know. And I've had the experience, and I don't know if this is unique to me or not, but when I started my business, I had my circle of friends, and they were my friends. I've had them since college. They were always going to be my closest friends. But I realized maybe, I don't know, 8 to 10 years into owning my business, that they weren't the first people that I went to turn to when I had issues and problems. I had started getting to be more comfortable with and more familiar with some of the people I met working on these committees. And I had gotten friendly with them. And some of them had crossed the line and became friend first and business colleague second. And because they were also business owners, they had this really great ability to help me solve my problems in a way that, you know, my husband or my friend didn't really have. They didn't have that insight of what it means to stand in that those shoes of being the business owner and have to face that issue. And so I started becoming more socially or friendly. I don't know how to say it. I started opening up more on a social level to some of the people in my networking groups and some of the people on these committees I serve with, and forming the bonds of friendship. And it really deepened my ability to open up and share this hard stuff. And they did likewise in turn. And it gave each of us this sense that, like, wow, here's somebody who really gets it, whose advice really matters because they've followed their own advice and their advice comes from their own experiences. And they can help me get through this problem because they've been there and they've done that. And it is such a fabulous way to feel supported. There are mastermind groups that do this in a more formal way where you're meeting with the same people each week or each month. And those are fabulous. But you can do this informally by just finding the people that you naturally gravitate towards and who you feel are really smart about what they do and starting to form friendships with them. And they have really helped me smash plateaus because when I get stuck, those are the people I turn to. And their advice helps the most. It helps way more than the advice of other people who I might speak to more frequently in my life, but who aren't the ones who have been in the trenches and don't really have the answer to the problem I'm trying to solve.
Yeah, there's something really powerful about support from our peers.
Absolutely. It's something you don't really understand how much is you need it until you start to take advantage of it. And I could not more strongly urge every business owner to build and nurture their support network and rely on them. And every time you feel stuck in any way, there's got to be somebody in that network who has come up against that challenge or who has a resource who can help you with whatever the challenge is. So one of the things I learned early on was be vulnerable, share your stuff. Don't hide it. You don't have to be perfect. Nobody is perfect. And so if you go around saying life is great all the time and your business is doing fabulously, you'll never reach that spot where you can open up and talk about the tough stuff and get the advice that you need.
Yeah, that's great advice. So Lara, whom do you know personally who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
I would have to say Pia Silva of Worst of All Design, and I would be surprised if you haven't interviewed her. You know,
She was a guest on the show early on.
Yeah, and if depending on how long ago, you might even want to interview her again because she's been a master of reinvention, and she's in a business like mine, and she's developed an entirely new business model that, as far as I know, and I think as far as she knows, had never existed before. And she's invented it. And she's now you know, you always hear that people who say, oh, I'm going to create the life I want and live the life I really want. And she's one of the few people I know who actually got up and did that. And it's still evolving. And I love following her.
That's really great. Great example. Laura, what's going on with you? What do we have to look forward to from you in the near future?
Well, we're just launching a new website now.
Congratulations.
It's been way overdue. Thank you. We've been those, you know, shoemakers' children that are running around barefoot. So it's good to finally have that new site ready to go. We've got a resources and tools page, which has a ton of good info on it. There's resources for designers, of course, but there are also resources for small business people. And there's a lot there if you want to go check it out. It's the www.optimumdc, optimum like OPTIMUM and DC like Washington, DC, which really stands for Optimum Design and Consulting, which is the name of the graphic design firm.
And is that the best way to get in touch with you, through your website, or are there other ways?
Or email me. I'm always happy to take a look at somebody's logo or website and give them advice. And that happens frequently. You know, somebody has either had something for a while and knows that they need to update it, but doesn't really know how and can't really articulate. They just know that, like, you know, it needs changing, but they don't know why. Or maybe they're launching a new division or even launching a new side business and just don't really know what they need to get launched from a marketing perspective. So I have these conversations all the time. I enjoy them greatly. It's a little bit of mentoring, which I really try to do as much as I can. I do it formally through NABO, and I used to do it through Baruch, but I also do a lot of it informally. So if any of your listeners is interested in my professional opinion about what their brand is like or how it could be improved, or you know, what they need to do with their new business to make a splash in the world, I would love to speak with them, and they can email me directly at Lara, L-A-R-A, at optimumdc.com.
Great. Well, Laura, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Smashing the Plateau today. It's been a really great discussion, in particular about systems and relationships and how they can really help your business move forward in a big way. So thanks so much for actually walking through step-by-step some great tips. My guest today has been Laura Kieselska, the founder of Optimum Design and Consulting. Thanks again, Laura, for joining us.
Thank you, David. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.